beer is a great source of evangelization because it brings people together.
Yep.
And you're able to talk about things a little bit more openly. For instance, the monks in Norcia, Italy, they said, people come to the monastery to try our beer, and then we tell them about God.
Right. Right.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, and welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast with the Augustine Institute. I'm your host, Joseph Pierce. And I'm very excited. I'm always excited with these podcasts because we have such exciting guests. And this time we have with us Jared Stout, one of my colleagues here at the Augustine Institute who teaches theology here. But Jared also has many other hats. He juggles many different responsibilities and jobs. So rather than my reading them all off, welcome, Jared.
Thank you.
And perhaps you can just give us more of an outline of the many things that you do.
Yeah, you know, I taught at the Augustine Institute full-time for 5 years, and now I'm a part-time teacher. But I'm at the Archdiocese of Denver, and I work with catechesis and parishes. I also teach for the lay division of the seminary here in Denver, and do a lot of writing for the Denver Catholic paper, for Crisis Magazine, Those Catholic Men, and other online periodicals.
Yeah, I love that fact about you, that you're a populist in the best sense of the word. You're able to write all sorts of things for all sorts of people and to make it accessible. But what is your academic specialty? Are you a theologian?
Yes, my PhD is in systematic theology, but my undergrad and master's was in Catholic studies, which is interdisciplinary. And so it was theology, philosophy, history, literature, and the arts. And so I always try to be interdisciplinary and to look at the big picture and how these different areas all speak to the reality of Catholicism in the world.
So you're a fully integrated man.
I try to be, yeah.
And as a fully integrated man, of course, you experience and appreciate the good things in life, such as, for instance, good wine. Hilaire Belloc, of course, famously said, wherever the Catholic sun doth shine, there's always laughter and good red wine. At least I've always found it so, Benedicamus Domino.
Amen.
Amen to that, brother. And as well as the love of wine, Belloc also loved English ale. And we are going to talk about your new book that's coming out soon. But as a way of setting that up, we'll have some more Belloc, because I know you and I are both great admirers of the great Hilaire Belloc. And Belloc having praised wine, this is Belloc on English ale and the future of England and the future of the faith, all bound up together. When they put food and ale before me, it was of the kind which has been English ever since England began, and which perhaps good fortune will preserve over the breakdown of our generation, until we have England back again. One could see the hops in the tankard, and one could taste the barley, until, more and more sunk into the plenitude of this good house, one could dare to contemplate the corruption and the imminent danger of the time through which we must lead our lives. And I felt as though I were in a sort of fortress of virtue and of health, which could hold out. And I thought to myself, perhaps even before our children are men, these parts which survive from a better order will be accepted as models, and England will be built again.
Please God.
Please God. Please God. So we see here, you know, for Hilaire Belloc, great Catholic writer, novelist, poet, essayist, historian. The good things in life, we talk about the good, true, and the beautiful, include the conviviality that goes with the fermented beverage, you know, whether it be wine or ale. So tell us something about your new book, which is full of this sort of very, should we say, rambunctious and jovial and convivial spirit.
Well, you know, we were just talking about integration. And so part of my own search for integration is the life of a Benedictine oblate. You know, so basically I'm a lay member of a monastery, Clear Creek Abbey in Oklahoma. And so the Benedictine ideal of work and prayer really shapes my life. And just through the years, not for having a lot of experiences in England, but I studied abroad in Poland and traveled widely throughout Europe and just really fell in love with good beer. And so then you come back to America and you realize that most people do not drink good beer.
Right.
You
know? Most people don't even know what it is over here.
Right. And so Belloc is praising the tradition of English ale. And yet, because of these large industrialized brewers and the rise of advertising, throughout most of the world, we've actually seen, you know, all, thousands of breweries go out of business, and there's these large conglomerations, to the point that in the United States, before 1980, there were basically only 40 brewers left in the United States.
Right.
And most of the beer was actually produced just by like five or six of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what happened in 1980 is that home brewing and microbrewing were legalized. And so now we're actually back up to basically where we were before Prohibition.
Oh, wonderful.
With like 40,000 breweries, you know, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but thousands of breweries, not just 40.
Well, I know, traveling around the country, it's impossible really to be in any town in the United States now with a population of more than, say, 20,000 that doesn't have its own brewery,
which
would have been unthinkable 20 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. And so as I'm, you know, appreciating the good traditions of beer, you know, I realized that Benedictines, you know, have this great history of brewing. Actually, the first large-scale breweries in Europe were at Benedictine monasteries.
Mm.
But, you know, the Benedictines went through hard times in the modern world. They had the Reformation, French Revolution, and then Napoleon. And so most of the Benedictine monasteries were also closed throughout Europe, at least. And so that brewing tradition also, you know, came to a stop at a certain point. Now, it was the Trappists and other Benedictines in Belgium that got it going again. But really, there were only a handful, you know, less than a dozen of these monastic breweries until 10 years ago.
Right.
Now the number of monastic breweries has more than doubled.
Oh, wow.
So there's also been this great revival of Benedictine brewing. So it's just, once again, one way of just seeing the big picture in my life, you know, like being inspired, you know, by Lectio Divina and the Divine Office and the Benedictine life, but then also seeing how Catholic spirituality relates to these other, you know, little things in life, such as beer. And so you mentioned I have a book coming out. It's called The Beer Option.
Ah,
and so I'm responding to the Benedict option.
That's one I want to take.
Yeah. Because, you know, the Benedict option is kind of looking at the tradition of Benedictine spirituality and saying that that can help us to renew culture.
Right.
And, you know, what I found in my research and in my own experience is that beer is a great source of evangelization because it brings people together, you know, and you're able to talk about things a little bit more openly. For instance, the monks in Norcia, Italy, they said, people come to the monastery to try our beer, and then we tell them about God.
Right. And the public house in England, you know, the pub, was the place where ordinary people got together. It's a day's blessed days before TV and internet, where people actually got together to talk to each other and sing songs, and that's where culture happened.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's very, very important as a corrective against the power of big government, because if you've got in a good living fighting democracy, people know each other, talk to each other, are friends with each other, rather than isolated in their own homes, just being fed propaganda. So I think the public house actually has, or the inn, if you like, to use older words, or the tavern, has a role to play in preserving freedom in our days. So there's all sorts of reasons. And of course, the flourishing of a multitude of small brewers, you know, the United States now is wonderful. The same thing happened in England a decade or two earlier. And what you, the very healthy thing you say about the Benedictines and other religious orders taking up the brewing of beer, it's actually a manifestation, an incarnation of Catholic social teaching, where we actually want, instead of a handful of mega-sized businesses producing things, we want lots of small businesses producing things. So it's actually Catholic social teaching as regards subsidiarity being put into practice. So there's all sorts. It's not just the fact that beer is good, right? The culture surrounding beer and the production of beer on a small-scale craft ale is also good. So,
and there's a lot of innovation going on in the United States right now with these craft beers. But I would add to that as well, home brewing.
Yes.
Because, you know, the word economics, as you know, comes from the Greek word for household.
Yep.
And so economics used to be based in the home.
Yep.
And so I would say beer is one of the few things that I've really made with my kids, you know, helping out, you know, where you boil, you make the wort and all of this, you bottle it. And, you know, it was a family affair, you know.
Yeah, it's a hands-on craft. There's a lot of love that needs to go into doing it well. And as you say, it's something that's best done on a small scale. Mm-hmm. And that the most beautiful, you know, I wrote a book called Small is Still Beautiful. The most small and beautiful thing there is the Christian family. So, you know, something that home economics is what I say, you know, economia, right? Mm-hmm. Is basically housekeeping. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what it means. The economy of the home, you know, that small product, I mean, it's not just beer, bread, right, cheese, all of these things that we can make on a small scale is actually good, especially if the children are helping the parents and it's something that brings the family together. It's part of a healthy home life.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really crucial for the future of our culture. And I get into that in the beer option. And so basically people ask me, why would you waste your time writing a book on beer? And I said, no, it's a book on the renewal of culture through the lens of beer so that people will actually read the book. No.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a mode of evangelization. You know, and I write a lot of time that we have a choice in our lives, basically. We have time. The time is given to us. We can't make more time. We can use that phrase, but we can't do it. So we have a choice. Do we take time or do we waste time? Mm-hmm. And I would argue that most people, most of the time, with our high technology culture, are wasting time, which means they're wasting their lives away. Mm-hmm. Whereas instead of wasting time, we should be taking time. And of course, there are various ways we can take time. We can take time, obviously, in prayer. We can take time in our relationship with our families, one-on-one, a proper living relationship, incarnational relationship. We can take time by reading good literature, sitting down with a book, or reading poetry, which forces us to slow down. Yeah. The beauty of poetry is you have to take time because you can't read poetry
quickly.
It's a
good way of wasting time.
Yeah, taking time.
Well, they say you should waste time with God, right? You should waste time with your family.
But waste.
In the sense that you're not doing anything useful. Right? So in our utilitarian culture, they're like, the best thing that we can do is waste time on something worthwhile.
I'm so pleased, John, that this convivium is going to descend into an argument. Because I think the use of words is very important. And even, you know, there's nothing more useful in a practical sense than prayer. There's nothing more useful in a practical sense than spending time with God or spending time with your family. So, you know, it's just, what do we mean by useful? And that's why I always balk when people say the liberal arts are useless. No, they're not useless, actually. The liberal arts turn you into a fully integrated human being, and there's nothing more useful than that.
Well, people will say, because you take the time to give your life to things that are not intrinsically useful in utilitarian sense, you will be built up. You will be enriched in a way that your life actually will be more useful in the end.
Yeah, right? And you'll be a better human being, a more balanced human being with far more skills than the purely specialized discipline you'll learn in the so-called utilitarian world. And it means you'll actually be a better citizen, you'll be a better worker, you'll be a better husband, a better father, better parent.
Absolutely.
So it's the most useful thing in the world.
Yes.
So, you know.
And that's the great connection with Benedictines who brew, right? Because here you have these guys who... Okay, you could say they waste all their time with God. No, they make use of all their time to be with God, and yet they make the best beer in the world, the most highly rated beer in the world.
Yep.
Why? Because they care about, you know, what matters most, more than the beer, right. And it gives them the right perspective on it.
I said, to use my terminology, they take time.
Yeah, right? They know that
beer takes time. And therefore, it's worth taking the time.
Well, they're great capitalists, right? They invest their time wisely with what matters most.
I will avoid the temptation to go down the blind alley of discussing capitalism at this point. So, are there any concluding statements, concluding things you'd like, you know, us to know about the beer option? So, you know, tell us something about... Why should we be bothered about the beer option? First of all, what exactly is the beer option? To reiterate maybe some of the things you said earlier, what exactly is the beer option and why should we be bothered about it?
Yes. So I would say it really relates so much to what we've already been talking about. The beer option is simply, you know, looking at beer as one aspect of culture. You know, and we've really been losing a sense of culture in the sense that people are directly cultivating goods themselves. And contributing into a local economy. And so with the rise of microbrewing, with home brewing and all of these things, and actually really paying attention to taste, you know, appreciating, you know, the subtle distinctions of taste, that's something we're not very good at when we've been used to drinking Bud Light and other things like that for the last 100 years, you know. And so basically I would want people who read the book, It's coming out October 1st through Angelico Press. But so what I would really want for my readers is to get a sense of what Catholic culture is as a whole, and how beer is just one little kind of microcosm of that.
Right.
And so attending to the cultivation of a high quality product, right? You're using the goods of the earth, you're fashioning them, cultivating them, right? Which is the basis of culture. And then you're enjoying them, you know, through temperance, in friendship, in conjunction with fasting and with prayer. And I get into to problems even like marijuana, right? Which is legal, recreational marijuana is legal according to state law here in Colorado. How, you know, we can compare, you know, the proper use of alcohol in a healthy diet and in friendship and, like I said, conjunction with all these other things, and contrast it with other social problems like consumerism, the use of drugs, and even alcoholism itself, the abuse of these good things.
Right.
So I'm just trying to give people a sense of an integrated Catholic life.
Well, one of the great gifts, I think, of ale and wine is it teaches us the necessity or the virtues of temperance and prudence, because there's a price to be paid if you are intemperate and you lack prudence.
Right.
And of course, and the sin of gluttony, drunkenness is a manifestation of the sin of gluttony. So how do we? You cannot have a relationship with ale or wine without also being aware of temperance, prudence, and the dangers of gluttony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that sense, you know, the very existence of these things as part of our culture have an edifying and cautionary aspect. Well, Jarved Stout, this has been a joy. It's always good to speak on one of my favorite subjects. So thanks so much. Jarved Stout has been our guest. He's, as you said earlier, teaches here, one of my colleagues at the Augustine Institute, a trained theologian, but also a fully integrated man, which means he's able to talk on many other things, not just beer. But do check out Jarved Stout's book, The Beer Option.
If I could just quickly put in one last plug.
Absolutely.
I'm also doing a beer pilgrimage to France and Belgium, and we're going to be going to some great Catholic cultural sites, you know, the Louvre, Notre Dame de Paris, Chartres, and Lisieux, but we're also going to some of the great Trappist breweries in Belgium. So if you're interested in that trip, which is October 19th to 29th, you can go to rtijourneys.com. So.
Okay, rtijourneys.com if you want to join Jarved Stout on his pilgrimage in search of God, the great saints, the great cathedrals, and good French Benedictine ale. Jarved Stout, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
I'm Joseph Pierce, and I've been your host on this edition of the Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute. Thanks for joining me. Goodbye, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.